Good morning. Welcome to Hope Community Church. My name is John Neal. I'm on the pastoral staff here at Hope. Special welcome to those of you again that are visiting with us or just here with friends or family for the holiday weekend. Again, get a little bit more space here at Hope on holidays. Everyone kind of departs, so if you need to lay down, as I don't know if anybody said that this service, but you could take a nap at this point. You know, take advantage. Take advantage of this time because you don't get it that often. I am not the normal face up here, and so normally giving Cor Shimoleski a break here for the summer, so he's off somewhere. We really have no idea. When we give people a break, they just leave, and then we're like, well, kind of like the Avengers. It's like they'll come back when we need them. You know, we'll just bank on that for now. So because I'm not the normal face up here, I want to take a little opportunity just to share a little bit about myself. Again, a lot of you I know, many of you I don't know. And so I want to share a little bit of my story, how I came here to Hope. I am not a Twin Cities native. I grew up in a small town. I grew up on a farm in western Minnesota. How small you may... Yeah! Yeah! How small you may ask. Not that small. But I graduated high school with 46 people. So that's I've been told that, I mean, that was norm for me, but I was told that's on the smaller end. That's where I came to college at the University of Minnesota, where my first freshman psych class was bigger than my entire K through 12. That was a bit of a culture shock. But I loved growing up in a small town. You could do anything and everything, and you could, when we were applying for college, I remember my resume looked really awesome because it was like president, 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 captain. It was like, they don't know it's just me and another guy in this, but hey, I will take it. I will utilize that. So I grew up just a little bit of my faith journey as well. I grew up going to church. The gospel in its very simple form was shared with me growing up. For me, because I probably was following Jesus at such a young age, for me it's less, more like a light dimmer switch than a light switch, if that makes sense. You know, some people say like, oh yeah, I started following Jesus on this day at this time, and it's like, oh, I don't really have that. For me, it was been kind of on this journey for a long time, and it's kind of just been this dimmer switch that's been going up. And college for me was a significant jump in the dimmer switch. It was a time when God really got a hold of my heart and my life in many, many ways. And I know for many of you in college, that was kind of a similar time for you. I was an accounting major. So any other accounting majors? Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. That was way too extroverted for an accountant. I don't know where that came from. It was a rough crowd. It was a rough crowd. You know, like born to audit, you know, tattoos all over and... But I made it through. I made it through initiation and all that good jazz. And so I was heading toward public accounting. That's where I had an internship, and I was always been a bit of a planner. So I kind of had a lot of my life planned out post college. And after my junior year of college, a lot of things just went through a real season of difficulty that really, for the first time, really pried my hands open in a sense of giving God all of my life. It's like, yeah, I'm not reserving any more chips, God, as much as I have always said I don't have any, all my chips are in, these are yours now. And so really started processing of what future would be and what opportunities would be. And so actually after graduation, I spent a year in Turkey overseas with a campus ministry organization that I was a part of. And there was no like fortune cookie from heaven that told me to do that. I really struggled with this element of a calling, but it was really just there's a need, and I have the capability and capacity to fulfill that need. And so went to that great time, very difficult time, very, very, the probably one of the more difficult seasons of my life, just in a lot of different varieties, one of which was I was leading the team, and I think I just internally came face-to-face with just a lot of my inadequacies. I think just my need to be developed as a follower of Jesus more, and just a leader in a lot of ways, and then also kind of observe some leadership tensions that I was kind of a part of, but kind of on the outside looking in from. And it just grew in me this passion and desire. I just needed to be trained more. And so after that year, started looking at a lot of different opportunities, some kind of in Minnesota, but also more in the U.S. as well, and ended up doing LDI, the Leadership Development Institute, here at Hope, Hope being my home church. And it was great. One of the most significant decisions of my life. And it's weird now being on staff to like say that because it just sounds super biased. It's like, oh, no, I'm not. I don't want to be that guy. But if anything, I maybe would just want to publicly say thank you to this church. This church has taken a lot of time, sacrifice, investment in leadership development, and I am a byproduct of that. I've been on the receiving end of that and so much, and so just want to even say thanks for that. It was here at Hope that I met my wife. Let's see if I can throw her up there. Yeah, great. Katie. I joke that I have the best single guy strategy ever, because we met through small groups here at Hope, but not the small group that I was in. Because I lived with about six other guys, and we had about five small groups rotating in our house during a week. And so I just strategically positioned myself in such a way after I met Katie of like, oh, she opens the door. Oh, I was just putting my cereal away. It's Tuesday again? I didn't know that. Oh, that's so ironic. Oh, okay. You want to maybe talk for a little bit? So anyway, that's how we met. So I can joke that she literally just came to my front door. That's how I met her. That's how I met her. So but that's obviously been great. We just celebrated our 3-year anniversary here this summer. So a little bit just even about me personality wise. For those of you who know me, this won't be a shock, but for those of you who don't, if you're into Strength Finder and personality tests like that, I'm a high maximizer, which means that I like to take the lemon of life and squeeze every little piece of it that I can. So it means I'm super frugal. I'm never going to pay full price for anything. That's just like a motto I have. That's one way it comes out. But another way, so I gobble up a lot of resources on efficiency, effectiveness, mission statements, productivity, all that kind of stuff. Again, some of you hate people like me. But at the end of the day, the value or sort of the heart behind it is really all I want at the end of the day is for me to be able to take a step back and say, here's my life, or at least here's what I want my life to look like. Here's what I want it to be about. Here's what I want it to be focused on. And actually then also step back and say, okay, here's what my life really looks like, and actually see, okay, where is there overlap, where is there disconnect, and what adjustments do I need to make? A gentleman early in my life always challenged me, and he would use this phrase that I'd rather live by wisdom on the front end than regret on the back end. And that always stuck with me. And so it's been kind of a driving force for me. And that's one of the things I love to do here at Hope. I whether it's in classes or just talking with people, I just love having these conversations about what decisions you're making, life choices, moving in certain directions, and whether that's that transition from college to whatever God would have after that or whatever that may be. It's just a passion of mine because these are the questions that I am always sort of wrestling with and always struggling or processing through. So today, if you are one of those people like myself that are constantly asking these questions, this will be great. If you are one who maybe is just in any life season where you're kind of forced to ask some of these questions about direction of life, where am I spending my time, what does that look like, or maybe you're just in a camp where if you're honest with yourself, maybe these are just questions you should be asking yourself and processing through. Today is a fun day because our passage of Scripture today really opens up the conversation to talk about some of these, again, just that facet of the diamond of what life should be about, or where are we pursuing, or how do we use our time and energy. And so we are in a sermon series in the book of Luke, and we are just finishing up kind of on the tail end of a mini-series called The King and His Kingdom, and it's all hinged on this mission statement, again, keep the theme going here, that we've seen in Luke 4 of Jesus, that Jesus, speaking of himself, says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And for the past, you know, however many weeks, we've been seeing this mission statement played out by Jesus, displaying his power and authority and giving freedom and restoration in a lot of ways to those that are marginalized, those who are on kind of the outskirts of the community, those that you would likely think would be the least likely candidates for becoming a follower of Jesus. And so our passage finishes up. Again, we're at the tail end of that. Continues on from where we left off last week with the healing of the woman and the raising of the synagogue leader's daughter. And so I'm going to read our passage through for today, and then we're going to kind of rewind back to the start and then just walk through and make some observations from there. So Luke 9, if you have a Bible in front of you or your mobile device, feel free to follow with along. Otherwise, all the passages will be on the screens behind me. Luke 9:1. When Jesus had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. He told them, "Take nothing for the journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town. If people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them." So they set out and went from village to village, proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. Now Herod the Tetrarch heard about all that was going on, and he was perplexed because some were saying that John had been raised from the dead, others that Elijah had appeared, and still others that one of the prophets from long, long ago had come back to life. But Herod said, "I beheaded John. Who then is this I hear such things about?" And he tried to see him. So again, we'll rewind, kind of walk through. And so anytime you have a kind of a story, a narrative like this, you just have to ask the basic questions, right? Who's involved? What's going on? What are the basics? And so if you head back, obviously, when Jesus had called the 12 together. So in the process of Luke here, we've seen this gathering, this following of people of Jesus, right? But we've seen also these 12, these sort of hand-selected inner circle disciples of Jesus, who in a lot of ways have been given sort of this insider knowledge, the kind of VIP access to a lot of Jesus' teachings and miracles. Even if you remember last week, James, John, and Peter were the only ones allowed to go into the house of the synagogue ruler in the raising of her raising of his daughter. So Jesus gathers these people together. Then what's he do? He does two things. Again, you kind of have to just kind of follow the verbs. But he gives them something, and then he sends them to do something. So the first is, what does he give them? He gives them power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure diseases, which is interesting because so far we've seen that happen, right? That it's not, in of itself, that's not a shocker because we've seen those related with Jesus before. But this is the first time where we see this being extended to someone else other than Jesus and exhibited to someone other than Jesus. And then what? And then he sends them out to do what? To proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. So in a lot of ways, just continuing on the mission that, as we saw in chapter 4, Jesus has been doing since this whole time, again, in this whole mini series here. And so with that, this is where we're going to spend probably the most of our time. We're going to continue on the passage, but this is the most significant shift in this story because, again, if you think about the disciples in these 12 primarily, they're before at best have been just passive observers, that they've just been kind of there. But now this is the first time where Jesus is saying, okay, get your cleats on. we're getting you into the game here. You're moving from this passive observer to actually an active participant in this mission of what Jesus is doing. There's a great quote here by Joel Green that I just kind of highlight as we touch on this, that So what are they going about? What's kind of happening? What are they ultimately going toward? And he says this, that the kingdom Jesus preached in word and deed, so that he's been doing, and so now the kingdom communicated by his ambassadors, these apostles he's sending out, is the inbreaking presence of the reign and realm of God's saving activity to affect liberty in all of its forms. Again, to bring freedom in all definitions of the term. And so from there, though, we get this is kind of, again, this is what he's calling them to do, but he also gives these instructions, kind of supplemental to this, them being sent out to proclaim. And we're going to kind of walk through these and try to figure out what they mean, because you kind of have to ask the question, okay, why, of all things, why are these extra instructions that Jesus gives? And so the first instruction he gives is he told them, take nothing for your journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt. You have to ask the question, why take nothing? Like, what's the motivation? What's Jesus trying to get at here? And I love this picture because it's kind of funny in my mind, because I love sort of kind of creating a conversation in pictures sometimes. It's like Jesus saying, go, and you know the guy in the red is like, where am I supposed to go? And Jesus is like, I'm pointing, like literally that way. And the guy's like, should I take off this shirt? He's like, no, I said don't take an extra shirt. No, you can keep that shirt. And then the guy in the back is like, I have no friends. And, you know, and it's like, Jesus is like, come on, guys. Total side note, there's no relevance to that. So again, the question is, why take nothing? And so some people have speculated, why is that? Some would say that this is a model for all. So this is kind of a blanket. If you are to follow Jesus and to be sent out by him, this is what everyone should be like. We should go out and live in this type of manner. The only pushback I would give with this is actually later in Luke, in chapter 22. Jesus is actually going to ask his disciples back and refer back to this section. And he's actually going to say, hey, did you have any needs during this time? And the disciples say no. And he says, okay, well, then go forth. Then he actually says, take a purse with you. And so it seems like it's not like a consistent, this is always something to model, more so at this point. And so other people would say, well, because it's at this point, some would say it's really more the urgency of their mission. That's the strongest motivation why, you know, Jesus would have loved for them to take a staff or an extra shirt or a purse, but they just didn't have the time. So and it's like, okay, that could be. There could be that element playing in. That could be motivation. The passage doesn't necessarily tell us one way or the other. Others have said this is more just to share in Jesus' experience, that he's sending them out in a like manner to himself so that they can experience what he did. Again, could be. Others would say that, and this is a little bit more in the cultural realm that's kind of lost on us, but at that point there were a lot of preachers and people that would go around, but their primary motivation was just money. That was exclusively why they were doing it. And so he wanted to avoid this perception that they were preaching for profit or proclaiming for financial means' sake. And again, could be. The last one that most people, and this is probably where I land most strongly, probably like 80%, is it was mostly requiring them to trust God alone for their needs. And the rationale for that, again, is as you look into Luke 22, is that reference, that passage I referenced, that basically what Jesus refers to in this, looking back at this season. He says, hey, when I sent you out, did you lack anything? Were you in need? And the disciples said no. So it seems to be that his primary motivation is saying God will provide for you. And this, even in the context of this passage, which is really fun for next week, because this element of teaching these disciples with the feeding of the 5,000, which is next week, it kind of fits in the story of Jesus trying to teach his disciples something about this. So the next instruction he does give, though, is whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town, which is kind of potentially a bizarre one as well. And, you know, of course, in our culture, my response would be, Jesus, I just go on Airbnb's website. I can find pictures, you know, ratings. Like, I can find the best place in town beforehand. And again, my personality, I'm going to pay the least amount of money for it. So it can be effective for you, Jesus. Efficient, no. This is lost a little bit on us culturally, but it's just this, in this culture, you relied so heavily on village hospitality, and there could be this draw to seek better accommodations, if you will, once you get into a city. And this could, again, play into a little bit of Jesus not wanting them to be perceived as pursuing profit or pursuing comfort in this situation. And then lastly, he says, if people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. And again, this is something that's a little lost in our culture. And so Kent Hughes has a great quote here that I'd love to walk through. It says, finally, should there be any hostile reception, Jesus ordered his disciples to shake the dust off your feet when you leave their town as a testimony against them. Verse 5. Does this suggest a short-fused, hostile approach to spreading the gospel? Not at all. Rather, it was a dramatically gracious warning to those who rejected the kingdom message. It was customary for pious Jews who had been traveling abroad to carefully shake the dust of alien lands from their feet and clothing. This act disassociated them with the pollution of those pagan lands and the judgment that was to come upon them. The same action by the apostles symbolically declared a hostile Jewish village to be a pagan or Gentile-like. It was a merciful prophetic act designated to make the people think deeply about their spiritual condition, and this ceremonial act undoubtedly made a strong impression on the people and brought some to grace. So, which is amazing just to kind of think about how much, even through this story, or just walking through the book of Luke, how many times Jesus has pursued individuals with real, authentic, genuine faith outside of the boundaries of Israel and has called them true followers, where then those, he's rebuked those in Israel who have been who would be lacking faith and has almost categorized them as more pagan-like or Gentile-like, which obviously makes a lot of people not like him at times. So quick summary again, what seems to be the principles that Jesus is communicating is, seems to be more on this, depending on God to provide, be content with what God provides, and just do your part and what you've been asked to do. That ultimately, the response of those is not something you can control and is not ultimately in your hands. So continuing on, so they set out and went from village to village, proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. So they go about and actually do that, continuing on that mission of Jesus. And then now, verse 7, Herod the Tetrarch heard about all that was going on. Yeah, so again, if you've been following with us through this story, I call this sort of the Vader effect. It's that when someone shows up in a story, you just automatically have this feeling of like, oh no, someone's going to die. Or, you know, something bad's going to happen. Like, and that's what we've seen through Luke already. Because any time that Herod has shown up, it's been this, hey, John the Baptist, imprisoned. Hey, John the Baptist again, hey, you're still in prison. And continuing on. And now even to here, we hear that, and this is the first time in the book of Luke we hear this, is that John was actually beheaded. Now, other gospel accounts give a little bit more flesh of what that, how that came about, but it's the first time in Luke that we hear that. So it kind of brings up this, okay, this tension is rising in the story. And again, we don't know exactly what Herod heard what was going on when he says that. Could be specifically about the disciples in the context of the verse. Could be just some of the stories that are going along Galilee at this time. But clearly something has caught his attention here. So where then, he says, and he was perplexed because some were saying that John had been raised from the dead, others that Elijah had appeared, and still others that one of the prophets of long ago had come back to life. But Herod said, again, I beheaded John. And then says, who then is this I hear such things about? And he tried to see him. And this is the big question throughout this mini-series. Who then is this? And this is the question that both Herod is now asking. It's the question the disciples have been asking. If you recall back to when they were in the sea and Jesus calmed the storm. And it's obviously the questions that a lot of the religious rulers have been asking. Who is this? Who is this Jesus? Even John the Baptist, if you remember back a few weeks ago, was brought with this question of, are you the guy? Are you the person that we've been waiting for? And in a couple weeks, we get to hit the climax of that question. So stay tuned. Won't go into any more of that, but that gets really fun. So let's go back to the big point of this passage at hand. Coming back to, really, ultimately, you see this drastic shift in the narrative where suddenly there is this movement from on the disciples' ends from being just these passive observers to actual active participants in what God is doing through Jesus' ministry and moving this forward. That, again, what did Jesus do? He gave them something, and then he sent them out. And this is obviously a huge turning point just in the book of Luke itself, But ultimately, if you kind of zoom out in the grander story of Scripture, this is a huge, has huge implications of just what God is doing. That, you know, kind of zoom out, okay, how far can you possibly zoom out? Well, really, you start all the way back at creation, where God created mankind in his image or in his likeness or as a mirror of him, a reflection of him, a representation of him, sort of a way to sort of show himself off in a lot of ways. And then sin enters the world, Genesis 3, of which now this image of God, this kind of reflection-like nature of mankind to be able to show God off is now suddenly tainted. That where, again, the heart was meant to show God off, now it's bent inward. It's selfish. It's self-focused. To where then you see God who, in his love, starts this mission and this movement to continue to show himself off by really redeeming and restoring creation. And so he creates this people for himself, the nation of Israel, and saying, hey, this is going to be a people group that I'm going to show myself off to and that will be able to be and be a blessing to so that they can go and show God off to and be a blessing to other nations, all tribes, tongues, nations. Where then, but suddenly the issue that you see kind of reoccurring is that the main issue, the heart-tainted issue, is still at play. Even though they had the best, the cards were stacked in their favor, it still didn't work. There was still this issue of sin that wasn't dealt with. That was still apparent, even in them. And so you see throughout the whole element of primarily the Old Testament, you see this sprinkling of God sharing, like, what is his motivation behind what he's doing? And it's constantly this, for my namesake, for my namesake, for my namesake. I'm keeping a covenant with my people of what I'm keeping my promises, and I'm doing this for my own namesake. So again, keeping the desire of God's name going forth. To where you get to the point where we are right now, where the nation of Israel has been longing and seeking for this deliverer, this Messiah, this person who's going to get them back to the glory days, right? And then you get Jesus on the scene, and that's why people are constantly asking this question of, who is this? Who is this guy? Is he the one? This is like, maybe if you're reading a blog, the spoiler alert thing would come across the banner at the top, because we have obviously the blessing of being this side of the cross, where we get to see how, yeah, Jesus was that Messiah, is that Messiah, but he didn't come to just go back to the glory days and renew this political power nation system, but really he came to deal with that problem that came in Genesis 3, that heart-tainted issue in restoring that sort of image reflectionness where we would then actually become, go back to our created nature of being able to actually be people that, in a sense, show off God and be a blessing to all people. And continuing on in the story, obviously that's where, if you've been in Hope for a while, we are big, big fans of the book of Acts. And the reason usually for that is you have the four gospel accounts, right? It shows the narrative, it gives the story of Jesus' life. But really, the book of Acts is the only other narrative book in the New Testament that you have, that after the life of Jesus, the book of Acts is what continues on the story. And in a lot of ways, it helps define and understand some of Jesus' teachings. In a lot of ways, many people might be familiar with a familiar passage called the Great Commission. It's in Matthew, of just Jesus' commission, again, where he's saying, I am sending you out to be people like this that are going out to make my name known and be a blessing. And in a lot of ways, the book of Acts acts as sort of a key of, okay, how did that actually flush itself out? How did that actually find itself? And what we see is God draws people into a relationship with himself through Jesus, that there's this element where now you have these Jesus-following communities that are saying, hey, I want to go over to this area where there is no gospel presence. Like the God's reign has not been proclaimed or shown off in this area. To where then they go into this area, they learn the culture, they serve the culture, they get integrated into the culture, sometimes even learning a new language. So they then communicate the gospel in such a way that it makes sense to the audience. And then, again, trusting God's power and our purpose, he draws people into a relationship with himself. Where then you get these followers of Jesus that you now gather together for mutual encouragement, strengthening, sharpening each other, just the one anothering passages in Scripture. And then this body looks around then and says, hey, how can we again continue on this mission of making God's name known and being a blessing to all people around us? So doing that in their city and wherever they find themselves, to where of that group you see leaders raised up. You know, Jesus is always chief shepherd, but you see these under shepherds raised up to say, hey, we're gonna be given the care of this little flock. And raise up leaders and continue on this process, where then other people in that flock might say, hey, there's another area out there where the gospel has not been made known. And so this little flock says, okay, how can we raise you up and train you, develop you in such a way that then send you out into that area and just repeat the whole process. And that in and of itself is what we call church planting. And that's why here at Hope, if you've been here for a while, why we're so passionate about it. It's not only something that we feel like Scripture informs, but we feel like it's such an amazing way of seeing how the kingdom of God continues to expand in this area, not just locally, but globally, all tribes, tongues, nations. Again, where our hope is at the end of the Bible in Revelation, you see this great picture of all people. Which is great, and again, that's why we love the book of Acts, because some people would often say, oh man, if only we could get back to the early Acts church. It's like, I understand what you're saying by that, but again, the book of Acts is still continuing on the story, and you need to remember that up until like Acts 12, the early church was really, really racist, because it's not until like Acts 12 that the whole like aha moment of, oh, this is actually for all people, not just Jews. And that doesn't click until then. And so again, we always have this eye toward all people, knowing and being able to experience and come into a knowledge of making Jesus and making God known. And that's why I share all that, because at the end of the day, that is why we as a church exist, at Hope Community Church. I mean, we, even in our vision statement that, you know, you've maybe heard once or twice or many times before, that our vision here at Hope is to honor God by helping as many people as possible become fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ. So we are to, you know, our focus is to honor God. He's the primary person here. We want to make him known, but then we want to help as many people as we can, you know. So again, we've never been about numbers, but if there's an option between more people knowing Jesus and less people knowing Jesus, we're going to choose more people knowing Jesus. But there's also, it's not just I follow Jesus, not just this one-time decision. It's like, no, this is everything. This is you putting all your chips in, and this is making fully devoted followers of Jesus Christ. And so, obviously the question of how do we do that, you might have heard this buzz phrase a lot, that how we do that is gospel in community on mission. The gospel being, at the end of the day, all that we have, doing everything we can in context of community, but also realizing that we are sent individuals and sent out to make God known and to be a blessing. And so this is huge in obviously just the, again, here in the book of Luke, but in the grand story of what God is ultimately doing, that in his strategy, he has chosen to use his people. Now, there are times, I will admit, I think that is not a good strategy. I know myself well enough to know that, God, I think it would have been a lot easier if you would have just bypassed me in this. But that's not the way he works. And we get the joy of actually being able to move from passive observers to active participants in what he's doing. So the question I have for all of us for the remainder of our time is, I just want to ask the question of where are you in this story? Are you one of those that's just asking the question of, who are you? Who is this? Who is this Jesus? And if you are in that place, we are so glad that you're here. Stay there. Process through that. We love and hope that Hope is a place where we've created an environment where you can just ask the big questions that you can process through. And you might ultimately you might disagree with us. That's fine. But we want you to know, we love that you're here, and we want to help you in that journey of figuring that out. For the rest of you, you may be in a place where you've said, yeah, no, following Jesus, this is something that, this is what I want, this is what I've desired, this is what I've pursued, and you might now, because of that, be called to move from a passive observer to an active participant. And the difficulty, I think, for many of us, and this is one I just want to spend the rest of our time talking about, I feel like in our culture, the difficulty in this arena is we haven't really seen it modeled well. In such a way that, at least I know in my experience, my upbringing, there was just an absence of this. It wasn't like it was a bad example of it being modeled. I just didn't see it modeled at all. To where some of you may have an experience where, you saw it modeled, but maybe that modeling of it was to such a degree that you wouldn't want to replicate it. You have issues with that. Or some of you might be where, hey, you did see it modeled, and you would want to replicate it. But maybe you were in groups or organizations or with a bunch of friends that this might just be an issue that we have as a culture as a whole, but it can tend to be very compartmentalized, that you almost have, hey, there are these times when, from 9 to 5, I'm going to go be missional, or I'm going to, go share my faith, or I'm going to go bless the city, or, whatever it be, whatever phraseology you'd use. And I fear that the downside of that, again, that is great, and we should highlight that and should do that, but I feel like I fear the downside of that is it in our minds trains us to think of being on mission or in this mission of making God's name known and being used to bless other people. We kind of put in a realm that's a little bit more like this, where it's just one more ball that we're juggling in all of our life, where we have work, career, we have family, we have community where we live, we have leisure, we have church activities, we have just all these things that we're a part of, and then there's mission, that there's being involved in this mission. And usually the phrase, and you probably know this in your own heart if you felt it, but usually it comes with the thought of, if only I had more time. That's usually one of the biggest indicators. And my proponent, and what I would propose, and this has just been something that's been helpful for me, that instead of thinking of it as just one more ball to be juggled, that really in a lot of ways, in the holistic view of Jesus sending us out of being his people and being his ambassadors, that really it should look more like this. In a lot of ways, it should be more like a wheel, and at the hub is being on mission, making God's name known, and being a blessing. And then everything else are just spokes of that wheel that actually flow out of that. So questions of work, career, church, activity, where I live, all that flows out and add the question of what is being on mission or missional, again, that's sometimes a phrase that's used a lot, look like in this context. And a phrase that I've grown to use a lot, and I just think it's helpful, it just helps my simple mind, it's just doing ordinary life with gospel intentionality. Just doing ordinary life with gospel intentionality. And I think for me, the biggest area where I was challenged by this was obviously when I went overseas spent my year over in Turkey. And I think suddenly for the first time, I was challenged to start asking, when I ask questions like, where am I going to live? How am I going to spend my evenings and weekends? Where am I going to shop for my groceries? What coffee shops am I going to frequent? All of a sudden, I was challenged to think of those as really on-mission strategic decisions. And that had been the first time in my life that I ever, ever asked those questions. And even today, I still struggle with asking those questions. And I'm a pastor. Okay, if anyone should have those embedded in my mind, it should be me. And so I can only imagine that there are others that feel that tension as well. I remember having a conversation with a guy who was conversing about and just throwing around the idea of maybe doing missions abroad. And I remember he said this phrase. He's like, "Yeah, I don't really know. It seems like there's a lot of sacrifice." And my response to that is, "Yeah, that's true. There is. And in one sense, that is, oh yeah, totally. You have to count the cost, and there's a lot that comes into this, but." The other side of that coin is I fear and I wonder as our culture of how much we really understand this, when Jesus calls us to put all chips in, it's all chips in. And maybe for many of you, like myself, it's taken a long time to really continue in that progress. And I have to continually put chips in because I so quickly want to take them back. in that process. And so, here's what I know. Here's what I don't know. What it looks like to be on mission in your context, I don't know. Because you are in such a unique situation, and God has positioned you in such a unique place, there's a lot of thought that goes into that. And I would say usually for most people, the two biggest barriers that most people face is one, it's more of a heart, more of a motivation. And usually people's response to, oh yeah, when conversations about being on mission arise, admittedly, and this is I'm at the forefront of this, guilt is usually the biggest motivator that gets me to that place. And the challenge for me, and what I would challenge you for, if you're in that place today, to really think through, okay, you are a part of the story of the world. And this is something that we should be excited about and get to. And the subtlety of the heart that makes that transition where suddenly it transitions from something I get to be involved in to something I have to or I should do, and it's all guilt-laden. And for that, maybe that's something you just need to process for. Why is that? Why is this something that's more guilt-stricken? And where is that area of my heart that I need to pull the gospel through? Or for some, maybe today it's more just that intentionality piece. It's more just the head. I just haven't done the work of actually thinking this through and processing this and maybe having these questions. Maybe you're where I was that year after graduation, where sometimes this was the first time someone had actually made me think about this. And so maybe that's in your position where you are today. And so again, I don't know what it'll look like in your context, but here's the two things that I do know. God has positioned you where you are for a reason. So where you live, where you work, the family you were born into, the resources you have, the skills, the passions, the heart that you've been given, God has positioned you where you are for a reason. And the second goes with that what I do know is that none of us know what hangs in the balance with where God has positioned us. You just don't know what relationships could be restored. You don't know what people could experience liberation and freedom for the first time. You don't know what people could actually say, yeah, I want to follow Jesus. I want to move toward him in this way. We just don't know. And so we don't know. And I'm always encouraged by just the passage in the book of Esther where she's basically brought forth and says the question is, maybe God put you here for a time such as this. And maybe God put you where you are for a time such as this. Maybe it's not what you thought it would look like. But again, I know that God put you there for a reason. And you don't know what exactly he could do with it. And so the piece that's always motivating, this is a great book. And what's motivating for me about this book is it is full of ordinary people, common, everyday people who by faith trusted in God, and God, with God's help and obviously by the power of God, did amazing, extraordinary things to, again, be aligned with the mission of making God's name known and being a blessing to all people.